UFC joins the short list of early entries into resumption this weekend when it puts on a pay-per-view event in Jacksonville, the first of three spectator-less events in 8 days for the promotion in that city. With a 25-page plan that will revamp its operation in a state that is one of the first to reopen, it's the UFC that the rest of the sports industry will be watching closely this week. We'll discuss that plan and why the UFC believes it's time to get back to work with the company's chief operating officer, Lawrence Epstein, on this episode of SBJ Unpacks. I'm Bill King, joined now by UFC chief operating officer, Lawrence Epstein, who has ventured out of his Las Vegas home for the company's first U.S. event since the shutdown held tomorrow night at ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena in Jacksonville, without fans, of course. Lawrence, the UFC, and particularly your CEO, Dana White, did not go down without a fight, right? You went to great extremes to try to get a pay-per-view event off in the United States when the quarantine first began. You lined up a site on tribal land in California, and then finally opted not to do it when Disney came in and said, no, we're out. What has unfolded since then? I mean, you guys were very aggressive about trying to get something off. What has unfolded since then, as you considered lots of different options for a return and calculated what the appropriate time would be?
Well, the first thing, you know, we did, and this began well before the Taachi Palace proposed event, is, you know, we got together our team, of course, you know, working remotely through telephone conferences and through Zoom.
Right.
And we began the development of a comprehensive health, safety, and operations plan. You know, that resulted in, you know, a document that is essentially 25 pages in length, with really lays out, you know, all the procedures by which, you know, we're going to put on these events. And essentially, you know, that is the blueprint for what we're going to be using in Florida on May 9th, May 13th, and May 16th. And then hopefully relatively soon thereafter at the UFC Apex facility in Las Vegas. I think the big change, you know, since, you know, the Taachi Palace proposed event is the availability of testing.
Right.
And we're lucky now to have, you know, plenty of testing, both antibody testing, which we can get results back relatively quickly, which gives us some insight into, you know, whether or not someone has been exposed. And of course, antigen testing, which we're able now to get results within about 20 hours, which will give us, you know, a definitive result as to whether or not somebody actually has the COVID-19 virus.
So how did Jacksonville specifically come together? And I know you've got, you know, that 25 page document went before the state boxing commission there, and they signed off on it. I know you've got it pending now in Nevada. They're looking it over before signing. I'm sure they'll sign off, or I suspect they'll sign off for it before your first event that's planned there. Why Florida, and within that, why Jacksonville? I suspect it has something to do with individual states and the approach they've taken to reopening, but is that the case? And then within that, why Jacksonville?
Yeah, that's absolutely accurate. You know, Florida, as we know from the media, has been a state that has been out in front of sort of getting back open and trying to get back to normal. And, you know, we had support, you know, obviously from the governor, Governor DeSantis, the Florida State Athletic Commission, which will be actively regulating the event, and also the mayor of Jacksonville, who was aggressive in wanting to attract this event to Jacksonville. You know, as you indicated, we're not going to have fans or any spectators in attendance, but you know, the state of Florida, which is tourist based, you know, was excited about having a UFC event where we could certainly talk about Jacksonville and all it's got to offer, and broadcast those positive images of that city to the 150 or so countries around the world that take UFC content.
You'll put on three events in 8 days there. Walk us through how that decision came about to get in one place and stay there. I suspect that was the key, right? Get one place and stay there.
Yeah, that was a huge part of it. And, you know, of course, you know, every decision we're making right now is focused first and foremost on health and safety. And so the concept of doing three events in a 1 week period where, you know, yes, the fighters are going to change for those three events, but for the most part, the staff and the production crews are going to remain the same. So we'll have the same people shooting the event, same people, you know, sort of operationally running the event. And that means, you know, we'll have control over all of those people that are part of this. They'll all be tested multiple times. They'll all be essentially quarantined in a host hotel, which we've essentially bought out and control. And so, you know, as we thought about what is the sort of the best way to do this from an health and safety standpoint, you know, concentrating the events in a shorter period of time where we could use essentially the same crew was very attractive.
How did you go about examining your standard event? I know in talking to other people, people are sort of looking at their events, whether it's in a stadium, whether it's an arena, in the case of your sister, the PBR, whether it's out on a ranch, they're looking at those events and sort of forensically going through everybody who's there, whether they really need to be there. And by the way, where they are and who they come into contact with. Is that what you had to do? Had you started doing that? You put on an event in Brazil without spectators, but that was really early on. I can't imagine you did it to the same level that you had to do this time. Tell me a little bit about that process for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing you got to do, and we started doing this actually down in the Brasilia event, because we were getting, you know, indications from the government there that they weren't going to allow spectators. And if they were going to allow the event, it had to be, you know, an event where as small amount of people could be involved as possible. So the first thing that we did was do exactly what you said. We sort of looked at what it takes to produce a typical UFC event. And try to figure out ways to limit the number of people that were involved in that production. So typically for a UFC, you know, pay-per-view event or even a fight night, you know, we've got well in excess of 300 people, and that includes fighters and corners,
right?
But well in excess of 300 people that are involved in the production and operation of the event. What we've done, and we started in Brasilia, but we've drilled down even deeper. And in for example, in Jacksonville, we will have cut that number more than half. So the first thing you've got to do is just limit the number of people that are involved in this. The second thing we started thinking about is, even at social distance, of course, you're going to have social distancing, protective equipment to make sure people, you know, are safe with masks and glasses, et cetera, and shields. But the next thing we had to think about is, even at social distance, how do we figure out ways to limit interaction between those people that are going to be producing the event? And so what we've done is develop a zone system that, you know, makes it very clear to all those involved that they are only to be in certain zones at certain times, and they're not allowed to go into other zones. And once people's work is done, they are to immediately leave the facility and go to a, you know, either the host hotel or some other area where they're sort of out of the ecosystem. So, you know, we saw a lot of efficiencies there too. And a lot of this stuff, you know, I think we're going to continue on, you know, hopefully when we get to the other side of COVID-19 relatively soon, we're probably going to keep a lot of these things, you know, in place, because, you know, we're starting to see some ways to be, frankly, more efficient in the way we operate events.
The zones and groups, as I understand it, those become really critical, in part, not only because you're less likely to expose as many people if someone is walking around with a virus and doesn't know it, but also because if that happens, you then know where to start. It's sort of like a tracing, in essence. And you can say, well, we may have to take these five or six people out of you know, the environment, but we don't have to just shut down. Is that the way you looked at it? How did that work for you guys?
Yeah, it's certainly part of the analysis. I mean, in Brazil, you know, the government said you could put on this event, but there cannot be more than 100 people at any one time in, you know, what we call the bowl area. And so, you know, we were forced to sort of think about these issues very early on. And, you know, one of the things that we did is, you know, we typically have, you know, all 24, 26 fighters in the arena at one time, you know, all sort of queuing up for their fights, of course, but they're all sort of, you know, there, and then they're hanging out afterwards, having something to eat and decompressing, et cetera. You know, that whole, you know, as an example, that whole process has completely changed. And so, you know, for the most part, we're only going to have about four, you know, matchups. So eight, maybe up to 10 fighters max, but typically just four in the arena at any time. And once your fight's over and you're through with your medicals, you're moving into a completely different area outside of the arena bowl. So you're not going to come into contact with anybody. And you're absolutely right. We're going to be able to very effectively and efficiently determine if there's a positive test, you know, who people came in contact with. And that's, you know, I think obviously very, very important to make sure that, you know, things don't spread.
But you didn't go to a full-fledged bubble environment. Again, you, the PBR, one of the things that was interesting is they went on to that ranch, you know, about 30 miles north of Oklahoma City, lots and lots of land, put out a bunch of RVs, People drove through a great gate and got tested, did not leave again. All the food, everything that came in stayed in. And when everything went out, it went out, tested on the way in and tested on the way out. And so they were able to really, really create the bubble that we hear about. You know, we hear about baseball trying to do a bubble in Arizona that probably isn't going to happen now, but they looked at it. You know, potentially the NBA, the same thing in your hometown of Vegas, talked about that, the bubble. Your bubble's not quite a full-fledged bubble. I'm sure you thought through that. How did you land where you are in saying, hey, we're going to go to a hotel. We're going to give these guys or these people, men and women, some freedom.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the guys at PBR did an incredible job. And yes, they have some unique circumstances with respect to their events. But, you know, I think they did just an amazing and a thoughtful sort of operational plan. And, you know, we really learned a lot from them, too. We spent a lot of time looking at their plan and seeing what they did and tried to adopt where we could, you know, the good ideas and the good processes they had put in place. But, you know, I think what we've done, is about as good as you can get if you're going to, you know, sort of do an event in a somewhat, you know, urban environment. And I think, you know, I don't care what sport you're involved in other than PBR, where you could sort of go to a remote ranch right. And sort of do this stuff, you know, whether it's hockey or whether it's NBA or whether it's football or whatever it is, you know, these events take place generally in urban areas. They take place generally in areas where there are arenas. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things you can do to create, you know, a de facto bubble. But ultimately, you know, what we've done is I think we've put a lot of procedures in place from a testing standpoint, a screening standpoint, and making sure that people, you know, that potentially, you know, have been exposed don't even get into the ecosystem. And then once they sort of get there, you know, I think, you know, we've done some stuff with making sure that we're the only people in a particular hotel tower, that the rooms the athletes will be using for weight cutting or for training are only going to be, you know, not open to the public or not going to be accessible to any other groups in between use. They will be thoroughly cleaned and sanitized. And then I think the other thing that's incredibly important is we're doing a lot of education with athletes and their teams and explaining to them, you know, what they need to do and what they should not be doing. And, you know, in order for this thing to work, and this is true with our community, you know, in general, you know, there's dual responsibility on behalf of everybody to make sure that they're protecting, of course, themselves, but they're also protecting, you know, the community that they're a part of. And I think that's been one of the best things about, you know, what we've seen so far is that the athletes and their corners are taking, you know, this very seriously, and they appreciate the testing and they appreciate the procedures. And so far they're holding up their side of the bargain. So, you know, I think that's how you get about as close as you can to the proverbial bubble. And I think we've got a pretty good plan in place that's going to, you know, really, you know, cover all the bases and hopefully, you know, prevent, you know, anything, you know, too serious from happening.
Did you talk to athletes about who they might bring? I mean, they've obviously you'll be able to control who comes into the building with them and who gets, you know, close to the octagon with them, who corners them. Those things you can control. You can know who those people are. You can test them. But what about, you know, will that same process be in place around the hotel if they do want to bring, you know, strength coaches or any of their own trainers or anybody that they may have worked of? I mean, a lot of these athletes are surrounded by or orbited by all this sort of support staff. What did you say to them, since you won't be monitoring that like in a total bubble? What did you say to them about who should and shouldn't be with them?
Well, we certainly limit the number of people that are permitted into, you know, the closed hotel. If you want to bring your strength coach and other people, they're going to have to stay somewhere else. But if you're going to be, you know, in our, you know, hotel, you're going to be limited to the number of people. And of course, all those people are going to be pre-screened and tested and screened all the way through and tested all the way through the process until they leave and go home. You know, one of the challenges is states are opening up. I mean, yeah. You know, it's no longer, you know, a situation where, you know, only essential businesses right. or, you know, most hotels are closed. I mean, in Florida, you know, most hotels are now taking reservations from anybody. So it's going to get, you know, there's no doubt as time goes on, the virus is still going to be an issue, but, you know, creating these de facto bubbles is going to, you know, frankly, get more challenging. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get back to, you know, the shared responsibility where, you know, this stuff can be accomplished if everybody holds up, you know, their side of the bargain. And I said, so far, you know, the athletes have been doing that. And I know we've been certainly holding up our side of the equation.
Face masks and gloves, level to with which you'll either request, expect, or require those?
You know, we're going to expect certainly, you know, face masks for everybody that's going to be, you know, in and around the bowl area. Obviously, not the fighters, but we'll expect everybody else to be wearing that type of stuff. As far as gloves go, there's a lot of controversy, you know, back and forth on that. Clearly, that will be involved in cornering and referees and all that will be wearing gloves. But, you know, and I assume some personnel, camera personnel, other production people will. I'm sure there will be people that won't be wearing gloves, but will, of course, be washing their hands on a regular basis, either with soap and water or using hand sanitizer.
What is there's that moment that anybody who watches your events is so used to seeing, where after the entry, which obviously that's going to go away, I suspect, or maybe not, you tell me, the ring walk, I don't suspect that's going to be quite the same. But there's that moment before they go into the octagon that they do have to be checked, right? And they have that's a very physical process between, you know, an inspector and the fighter. Does that change?
No, I mean, that process has got to move forward pursuant to the rules and regulations of the Florida State Athletic Commission. But remember, you know, the athletes have been heavily screened. The athletes have been extensively tested. The same will be true of the personnel from the athletic commission. So, you know, and I expect those athletic commission members to be wearing some protective gear, whether it's glasses, face mask, and likely gloves. So, you know, at the end of the day, those interactions still have to take place because they've got an important regulatory and safety function. But they're going to be done in a way that's consistent with, you know, the world we live in today.
Testing. You'll have about 1,200 COVID-19 tests on hand, right? Between the two types. We talked about who you'll test, how often. Tell me a little more, though, about how often they'll be tested. And what was your conversation as you considered, everybody who's considering this was a little, that I've talked to, was a little bit worried about the public perception and the blowback that they might see, similar to what the NBA saw when they tested players. And people are saying, you know what, there are healthcare workers who can't get tested. There are all sorts of people who say they can't get tested. I'm sure you had to have that conversation about what sort of, you know, what you would face once people heard that you were testing all the athletes, testing all the staff, doing it repeatedly. How did you get to where you are on that question?
Yeah, there's no doubt that that was a concern of ours from day one. You know, we were never going to take away a test that, you know, a healthcare worker needed or a first responder needed or, for example, somebody who was sick, you know, needed. The good news is that testing capacity has increased significantly. And also, you know, we are sourcing these kits from providers that were not essentially sourcing to the medical communities.
Right.
And so, you know, we don't believe that, you know, there's been any, you know, decrease in capacity for those that really need this stuff. As I said, the healthcare workers and the first responders and the, and of course, people that are sick. And I think that's, in particular in Florida, that's been confirmed by, you know, local authorities on the ground there. So, you know, that was absolutely an issue. And, you know, we feel very good about where we're sourcing these things and the fact that we're not taking them away from those people that absolutely need to have those tests.
As this approached and as you were going down, not one, not two, but three cards to fill in Jacksonville, I suspect you had to have a mix of responses from fighters either saying, you know, get me a fight, I'm in, or others who might otherwise be due a fight under their contract and really be at a stage in their cycle that they should be in the octagon saying, thanks, I'll sit this one out right now. What is that mix like? Correct me if I'm wrong. I would suspect there has to be that mix. It's just the law of humanity and in large numbers. What does that mix look like? And have you polled the room fully to find that out?
Yeah, you know, I don't have the exact, you know, percentage breakdown, but I can tell you this: from day one, Dana White and the entire, you know, sort of team that puts together these fights made one thing clear, you know, unequivocally, and that was, if you have any concerns and you don't want to participate in these events, don't do it. And that's true with respect to fighters. That's true with respect to corner people. That's true with respect to our employees. And that's true with respect to our third party, you know, contractors that help us produce these events. So, you know, we'll figure out a way to get you fights at a later time if you feel uncomfortable. But, you know, if you do at all feel uncomfortable and you don't want to do it, we totally get it. And we don't want you participating in the event, you know, at any level. You know, as far as I know, you know, certainly the athletes that I've spoken with and in my interactions with, you know, sort of Dana and the matchmaking crew, you know, the majority of athletes were excited and wanted to participate. And once they saw the health safety plan and, you know, heard about, you know, the level of testing, you know, I think, you know, most people felt, you know, really, really comfortable. And we haven't had really, you know, at least for this first, these first three events, really any issues putting together, you know, these events. So, you know, the question is, you know, as we move forward, you know, I think the bigger thing is, you know, making sure athletes are in shape and ready to go with their gyms closed and, you know, all these things going on in their local communities. But, you know, as I said, from day one, Dana was absolutely clear with everybody involved. If you feel uncomfortable at all, don't participate, and we will figure this thing out when you do feel comfortable.
You have Cowboy Cerrone on this card, driving his RV, correct, from Albuquerque and staying in it. Is that right? Did you?
I mean, that's just normal protocol, so I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he did here.
So I wonder if that's not an appealing protocol, though, to in the future to other fighters as they look at this kind of thing. I mean, I wonder whether that's something that does make a little sense.
Yeah, you know, I think Cowboy, you know, may be onto something there. You know, he's been doing this virtually all of his fights. And, you know, in the world that we live here today, he might be onto something for sure.
This must be the first time you've traveled in a couple of months. What has lockdown looked like at the Epstein home/office? And what is it as we're speaking? You're about to get on a plane in a little bit and head to Jacksonville and then walk into a hotel. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'll give you a video right now. I'm laying on my bed in my bedroom right now, talking on a ground line so we have a good connection. And I mean, that's, you know, been sort of, you know, what I've been doing for the last 6 or 7 weeks, you know, roaming around the house, using different phones, trying to find a place where the dogs or my two college sons or my high school daughter or my wife aren't around so I can limit the background noise. I haven't been 100% successful in that goal.
None of us have.
I think I've done an okay job. you know, the crazy thing is that I've gotten used to it, and I think so many people sort of have. I miss going to the office and seeing, you know, many people every day and seeing people in person. But you know, I think our staff has done an incredible job adjusting to pretty challenging circumstances. And we're about to pull off a series of events. All of the work was done remotely. I mean, you know, virtually nobody was at the office doing any of the work that's led up to this event. So, you know, I think we've sort of settled in with this new sort of way of life. I'm hoping it's going to end, but I'm really proud of our company and our team putting together all the stuff that we've done and so excited to actually get out and watch some fights for sure.
You know, most of us, or many anyway, sort of are in that trepidatious stage where you're sort of, you know, starting to venture out a little bit more and maybe not ready to go to a restaurant if they are open in your area. But even when you go and you get your takeout, it just is a little bit different. Like you're around people and then you're in the grocery store maybe with a mask and that's really different. All those sort of things. I can't imagine what it's going to be like to get on a plane, though it may be private, but to get on a plane and then get off a plane, travel, walk into a hotel lobby, those sorts of things. I don't know whether most people, as they listen to this, will be feeling envy or trepidation. Where are you on that? What's this like?
I mean, I think it's going to hit me when I throw the mask on and start, you know, walking around the hotel or, you know, at the airport and, you know, seeing other people sort of in the same situation. I mean, right now, you know, my interaction has been a couple of trips to the Home Depot and Costco and the grocery shop here and there. And I'm pretty efficient. You know, I keep my head down and I'm in and out knowing when I get. So, you know, traveling across country is going to be, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, the biggest thing for me is like, my parents are like, you know, they're concerned about it. Like, what are you doing? Why aren't you staying home? You know, they've got me a little bit, a little stressed out because they're so concerned, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm confident in our plan, and I know we've done the right stuff to make these events safe. And as I said, I'm going to be first in line to get tested when I land, and I'm sure I'll get tested multiple times throughout the week. So I'm going to know whether I've been exposed or not for sure. this week in Jacksonville.
Well, Lawrence Epstein, thanks so much. You know, we usually end these calls with something to the effect of stay healthy, stay safe. In your case, you're the first one I've been able to say safe travels to.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Lawrence. Lawrence Epstein, UFC. Too.